Hey, it's your girl Jess B.
And it's your girl Vina Nung.
And you are now locked in with us, the Anti-Socialites.
So turn up the volume and just chill out.
Because each and every week,
we're coming with that real talk.
Conversations with Miami's business owners, artists, behind-the-scenes nightclub professionals,
as well as social activists, community leaders, and aspiring artists.
Real talk from two cool chicks curating Miami's cultures, arts, and lifestyles.
Miami, baby, baby.
What's up? You are tuned in to the Anti-Socialites podcast. It's your girl, Jess Fee.
And it's your girl, Vina Nunn.
And today we got Lex in the house from Lex Promotions.
Hey, y'all made me feel at home.
What's good?
I'm good. I smell the food cooking. I see the Bel Airs on ice. Yeah. It's Friday.
TGIF.
I spend some time with the family and then, you know, go hit the streets. How's everybody doing today?
Because you got to get those checks.
Oh, man. Bills need to be paid. Clients
right.
need to be happy.
And word on the street is... You got some M's.
Yeah.
What you talking about?
We've been hearing you got you might be a millionaire.
Like Jesus. I don't know what you're talking about.
I've been watching you on Instagram. You're definitely an investor, you know.
Yeah, you have to. I will say one thing in the music entertainment industry and our us as millennials, we're trained and you know with society and with social media, you get money and stunt, flex, enjoy life.
But I definitely
will say
the Lex is not for flex.
But I will say I'm lucky enough to have some family members in my life that have guided me to make some smart financial decisions. So you've got to make smart financial decisions.
So how did you become an entrepreneur? Like, was that something that was instilled in you? Like, your family had made helped you make financial decisions, or like, were you kind of just testing it out? Because you know,
I think it was just like a domino effect. You know, some people grow up as a kid and they want to buy some and they get an allowance every week, but it's just mommy is gonna buy it for them, or parents are gonna buy it for them. Me, I wanted to buy some. I had to find my nickels and quarters between the couch and rub them together to make two more nickels and quarters.
Oh, okay.
And then go buy whatever I wanted to buy. So I think the entrepreneurship stemmed from me just wanting a goal, having a goal, and realizing if I want to tackle that goal, I have to get it on my own.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can we dig into crates? And when I say crates, I mean where did it all start? You know, word on the street is also that you was a DJ.
Yeah. You know, shout out to DJ Fly Guy. I'm looking forward to a battle with DJ Fly Guy. I'm gonna pull out the turntables.
Wow.
Actually, it should be me, Fly Guy, Effect, 360, Bulletproof.
That sounds.
And, you know, even Papa Keith, because sometimes he DJs. And then my original brother, DJ Mix. So talking about DJ Mix, started in middle school. When Irie was DJing the skating rings, and Irie was DJing skating rings, and I came right after Irie, I was also DJing skating rings, pep rallies, homecomings, and that's how I really started DJing all these high school parties, doing mixtapes, and then from there, that's how I ended up doing promotions, because from DJing the parties, like, alright, DJing the party's cool, but I might make more money if I throw the party.
Right.
So I started promoting the actual parties.
Mm.
And it was promoting the parties was actually competition between me and one of my partners. His name is DJ Mix. So we used to compete who could get the more people at the party. So
okay.
I'll do a party Friday, I get 200 people, he does a party on Saturday, he gets 300 people, then we end up teaming up.
Oh.
And as a team, we packed the house.
Get 500,000
yeah,
people.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sometimes it's better if you work together.
Exactly.
So it seems that, you know, some of the people that you mentioned, like, they're still heavy in the game. Like,
right.
Y'all basically, like, grew up together.
Yeah.
You mentioned Papa Key, DJ Bulletproof. Everybody's, like, successful.
Irie
for sure.
This is second shout out.
Yeah.
That means we need to get Irie on the show.
Maybe. Right. But it's like, how is it through the years seeing people, like, you know, grow in their perspective industries? Like, how does it feel to, like, still be standing in what you're doing and what you started?
I mean, I say it's a blessing. It's a blessing to still be in the industry, still be relevant, still be able to do what you love and have it be able to pay the bills.
Mm.
It's a blessing because a lot of people that started when I started, and knock on wood, some of them aren't here anymore. They've passed away from health issues. There's a lot of people that have passed away from health issues. Like, living this lifestyle, you're out till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You're drinking alcohol. Some people partake in drugs. You know, your body, you know, it's a temple, so you have to keep it healthy.
Right.
But I'll say that it is a blessing to still be here and still be relevant, you know, 10, 15 years later.
That you said something that's key, being relevant. How do you manage to stay relevant, you know, and keep up with what was going on, because you are head of promotions. I don't ever hear anything without Lex Promotions behind it, for the most part, out here.
I mean, to me, it's a passion. Like, I love what I do. And, you know, people know me over the years from marketing things in the entertainment industry, but I just feel like I'm a marketer. So whether it's entertainment, music, or not, I still have a passion to market or promote whatever it may be. Whether you give me a woman's shoe, a bottle of liquor, you give me a headphone company, which we've done, you give me an energy drink, you give me franchises. Now I'm really trying to get involved with the franchises. I did a lot of work with Rick Ross's Wingstops. Now E-Class is his finger licking, which he's opening up 6 locations. Yeah. I'm trying to get heavily involved with it. Because to me, as long as you know the product and you know the consumer, you can promote it.
Right.
So that's my mental. What's the product? What's the consumer? And then we'll promote it. Mm-hmm. And that's how I roll.
Damn. And you ain't go to? Did you go to school for this?
Yeah.
You did. Where'd you
marketing
go to school?
Marketing management, Broward College.
Awesome.
And even my college story, like, I'm one of those kids. Like, if you look at my grades in college, it was straight A's, then F's next semester. Straight A's. So one semester I'm in school. When I'm in school, I'm getting straight A's. Next semester I'm in school, I get a call from Uncle Luke. Hey, I need you to go on the road with me. And I say I can't. You know, I got a test coming up. It's midterms. He tells me how much.
Well, that money cost.
And the next semester, I'm going to school, same thing. And I finished semester. The following semester, I'm trying to go to school. Then I get a phone call. Hey, we need you to go to L.A. for a week, for 2 weeks. I'm like, I can't. I'm going on school. But you're going to meet this artist and this and again, this opportunity. And I go to school later. So my school pattern was a long road.
Gotcha.
It wasn't the typical 2 years and you're out. Yeah. It was stretched out over the course of many years. But, you know, so I believe that, you know, school works for those individuals.
And it's your own path. Like, you don't have to do 4 years. You don't have to do 2 years. You go as you go, because, like you said, things happen and it kind of changes for you. But
some opportunities, you know.
The opportunities.
You got to take them.
Price on.
Right.
Damn.
You can't take them.
That's so real.
Your tagline or mission is bridging corporate America with today's youth and urban market. And this is something that you were thinking about in 2004, correct?
Yeah.
So now that it's over 10 years, and you're like, right now America's heavily influenced by the youth, and did you foresee that happening, or like, how did that?
I mean,
come about?
That tagline is so.
It's pretty, very important
it's
right now.
Bridging corporate America with today's urban youth is my actual tagline. The way my first website when that was designed. As soon as you got on the website, what you saw was a bridge. And on one side, you saw a guy in a suit, corporate America. And on the other side, you saw kids with baggy pants.
Mm-hmm.
So half skaters, half hip-hop influencers. But there's a bridge. Because corporate America, at the end of the day, wants to sell to the urban youths. And some of them, like, you look at the corporate guy that works at Verizon. He does not know what's going to make that corporate youth, what's going to make this teenager, this college student's, purchase Verizon versus AT&T, purchase Verizon versus Metro PCS. And what I always wanted was my company to be the bridge. Because yes, I may be in the nightlife, yes, I may be in the entertainment industry, but I'm also in these corporate meetings, and I'm also speaking their language, and I'm also in the quote-unquote streets, and I'm speaking their language.
Mm.
So I know how to bridge it and how to make it make sense.
That's dope.
It's funny you say that, because recently there was some headlines about Revolt TV getting sued because some white boys was fired because they didn't understand the culture.
Mm.
And it was kind of looped into Breakfast Club because...
Right.
I mean, when you watch it on YouTube, you know it's more laid back. It's heavily hip hop. How important do you think it is for people to be able to either balance or just go all in? Because you're in the middle. You understand the streets, but you also understand the corporate talk. But with more companies being more geared toward the urban culture, how important do you think it is to be able to, like, understand both?
I mean, you just look at right now, Pepsi just did a campaign that
pull
just
it.
Backfired on
yeah.
them, and they had to hit that retract button so quickly.
Right.
And they, in their vision, whoever was the marketing head in their corporate office, like, this is going to work. This commercial is going to explode. They're fired.
Yeah,
whoever that person is fired.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, they had a mark and they tried to shoot the mark and they totally missed it. And they had to hit a retract button. But I will say, it's not easy. It is totally not easy. And there's times when you're going to be politely arguing with a client,
mm-hmm.
politely arguing with a marketing executive, politely arguing with a senior executive, and trying to make them understand what they will never understand. Because, you know, like, even I'm gonna do something, and maybe you guys can help me out, maybe we could all do it together. Like, there's so many times that I drive around Miami and I see ineffective billboard campaigns on the side of 95. Mm. And, like, the website is this small and the tagline might be, like, "We were here." And then it says visitmiami.com. Like, no one is seeing the visitmiami.com.
True.
But to the marketing executive, when they see it on their computer, "Oh, this is a great campaign."
Yeah.
"Yes, this works for a magazine ad. Yes, this works for a postcard."
So know your product.
But when you're in traffic, or you're driving 20 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour, you just look up at a poster board on the side of the highway for 3 seconds, you're not reading that small fine print, right, that says visitflorida.com. And they won't understand it because they were never out in the streets one-on-one passing out flyers with consumers and knowing the color schemes that work and knowing that consumer will look at a product and you have 4 or 5 seconds to get their attention.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to know who, what, when, where, why, and the message needs to be clear.
Yeah.
But they're just in a whole different mental where they won't understand that.
Aside from bridging the gap between urban youth and corporate America, even locally here, you kind of bridge a gap between, like, the urban side of Miami and then South Beach. Did you?
How is that? How is that? I'm going to ask you.
Well,
that.
I mean, because I've been here for 10 years, and since I've known you, you've always also been on the beach, but I also see Lex Promotions in the streets of Miami, and I don't even think that you knew. Did you know you were doing that at all?
I mean, when I first started, as you know, my first thing I did was I got an office on the beach. Like, I don't know how I was able to afford it.
Everybody got an office on the beach, and it's hard.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know how I was able to afford it. The first thing we did was get an office on the beach. And, you know, in Miami, as far as breaking records, if you want to get back to the music side, records don't really traditionally break on South Beach that often. Mm. You know, the beautiful clubs like Live, Story, Cameo, Dream, not that many records break on South Beach. But once your record is played on South Beach for a good amount of time, it means that, oh, you have a real record and you got a chance, and it could help take it to the next level.
Mm.
But the originator, if Miami is a booty shaking city, Miami was a booty shaking city, heavy bass influenced city, that the records broke in the adult entertainment nightlife. So if your records at one time were not heavily played in the adult entertainment nightlife, they would never get the traction of life. If your records were not heavily played in the teenage and the college spots, your record would not get to the next location. So if I'm the bridge and I need to be able to walk into Live without a problem, I need to be able to walk into the G5 or Take One back in the days without a problem.
Mm.
And then be able to connect all of those together.
Mm.
So those are the balances that have to be balanced out.
Do you ever get clients, because, you know, you break records, you move music and stuff, but do you ever get clients that have an unrealistic perspective on
what
you just said? Most records don't break on South Beach, but I know there's a lot of artists that feel like these DJs need to be playing their records in the club in order for them to get to radio. What is your take on that, and how do you explain that to your clients?
Not every record needs to be played in the club to be on radio. But okay, I will say, if you are moving on a financial aspect where you are on a limited budget,
mm-hmm,
it is definitely easier to get your record on radio if you have the hottest record in the city. If you go to 8 out of 10 nightclubs in Miami and your record is playing at prime time, then you're on people's radar.
Mm-hmm.
But people have to understand, once you get your record on the radio, let's say they play 20 records on the radio, Drake, Rihanna, Beyonce, Meek Mill, Ross, Wale, and you are Kiki has to be able to compete with Drake, Rihanna, Beyonce, Wale, Meek Mill. So what makes your record as good or better that they should not play a Drake record? They should not play a Rihanna record. They should not play a Meek record. They should not play a Ross record to play Kiki's record.
Mm.
So once you really break it down to them, all right, there's 20 slots per hour on the radio. That's 20 different songs. So at a 3 o'clock hour, they're not going to play Rihanna, so they could play Kiki's record. Kiki's record has to be as good as Rihanna.
Mm-hmm.
And or if it's not as good as Rihanna, when people hear it, they're like, "Oh, I remember that record. I heard it at Mansion. I remember that record. I heard it at Story." So that's the conversation. But yeah, some people have unrealistic goals, and you got to sit them down based on your budget.
Mm-hmm.
This is the reality. You know, it's kind of like that kid that's like that wants to be a doctor, and then you're looking at his grades, and reality is, I'm not saying it's impossible, but we gotta look at the reality.
Put in a little bit more.
Do you have to like the client's music to represent them or work
at this point? Yeah.
Okay.
at this point, let's go back to about 4 years ago when there was an influx of money in Miami. A lot of people were rushing to me to work their music. I didn't personally like the music. But so I won't work the record, because if I work the record, to me, that's co-signing the music.
Gotcha.
But that's when we developed the whole LPMG film department and our graphics department. Well, I won't work your record, but here's my videographers. They'll do an amazing video for you. Here's my graphic designers. They'll do amazing graphic designs for you. Here's my website team. They'll do a, so we'll give them the basics.
Yeah.
But the music to me wasn't on point, so I didn't touch the music. That to me is work for hire.
No, that. I feel you, because so many people don't listen to our podcast, but they'll come up to us and be like, let me be on your podcast. I'd be like, but do you know what type of guests we have? And they'll be indie artists. And be like, but did you check the website? Because that's where we feature indie artists.
Yeah.
So to have different aspects and to tell them, like, this is what I can do for you. I don't always have to work your record. Like, that makes complete sense.
And that's probably why we just laugh, because it's like, and not that we don't even like the music sometimes. It's just that we offer different things. Sometimes you just got to offer different things for different types of people, different genres and things like that.
And then the worst part, here's the worst part. This happened to me recently. I had a client that we started working their project, and I really liked the record. I was like, this is an easy record to work. This is an easy record to work. I had never met the artist. Then I met the artist. I was like, man. The artist was just
so out there. Sometimes people turn me off.
Yeah.
Like, and
but regardless, I'm like, this is one of those artists that you just hide and let the record speak for itself.
Okay.
Because the record's a no-brainer. It's gonna work. It's got a good feature.
Okay.
Hide the artist, put the artist in the closet, let the record speak.
Makes sense.
And that's from experience. That's been done before.
It just puts you speechless, because sometimes
what was that girl's name? I'm trying to Lumi D? Was that her name?
Lumi D from New York back in the day.
Remember how they hit her?
Yeah.
And the record was out?
Yeah.
They hit her when she looked like.
I've never seen her.
Exactly.
Yeah, she was kinda chubby, light skinned,
really?
But she was pretty in the face.
They hit her.
That was strategic marketing. Look, this girl's a little bit overweight, a little bit, she was a little wacko. They hit her and let the record speak for itself.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to marketing, is that something, like, you sit down and you look at the artist and you have to come up with those different types of campaigns? How long is that process for you? Sometimes it just comes to you?
It depends.
Is it a team of people?
Yeah, I mean, you have Rob Dade, who's our lead videographer, senior videographer, video director, Rob Dade. You have Hugo Richardson, who's been with me for years, project manager. Mm-hmm. They have Terry Sherman, who's based out of Jacksonville. And then you have Ross Mack, who's a lead artistic or visual guy. That's the core. And outside of that, we have interns and people that we hire on one-off, but that's the main team. So whenever we work a project, we'll do a group text, send it to everybody, have a meeting. Everybody will check out the links, check out the project prior to us touching it, and then see yes, no, heck no, or not yet. They're not ready for us, or what steps to go about it.
I like that. So you do like a little put your hand up, no, thumbs up, thumbs down. And has it ever been a time you wanted to work an artist, but then everybody else was like, no?
I think it's more of a time when the team's like, you need to go with this artist. And I'm like,
oh, it's convincing you that might be a little hard. Okay.
And I'm just like, I don't see it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you need to just go with it. Like, we have a new artist that we're working with. I'm not saying their name, but their sound to me is so crazy. I don't understand their sound.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why you got to keep, now at this point, you got to keep young ones around you, 19, 20, because that whole new sound of music is a whole other compared to the mainstream, traditional Ross, Wale, Young Jeezy, like 2 Chainz. These new guys have a whole different sound where you don't even know what language they're speaking. Is this English?
Yeah.
Like, you don't even know what language.
Is that 2 words or 1?
Yeah. So you got to keep the young people on your team just to make sure you're up to date with what's going on.
So you spoke of like your core team, but like if I was someone who wanted to join the team in marketing, what do you look for in an intern?
I'm going to say this with the camera. Make sure the mic is on. Mic check 1, 2. The number one thing to join LPMG at this day in April 2017.
Wait, the mic's gonna pick up your hands.
Okay. The number one thing to join LPMG in 2017 is, how can you bring more revenue to the company? We don't want you to come in and balance and maintain what we already have going on. Nah, been doing that for years. But how can you bring more revenue to the company? So it's either expanding on something that we're doing, or having an idea and a vision or a connection to get us new clients. It's all about expanding. So if someone's going to come in and say, hey, I see what you guys are doing, I just want to keep doing what you guys are doing.
Can keep doing it.
We keep doing that.
Right.
But if someone's going to come in and say, hey, I see what you guys are doing, this is what I could add to your team, this is what I could add, and this is how I could help the company grow, all day, come on board.
Awesome.
So
yeah.
That's the reality.
Yeah, because I mean, even if you were to go into a regular job, they always ask, like, what, they don't ask, but you're supposed to tell, what can you bring to the table? And if you're just, you know, coasting, like, hey, I'm already here, I'm cute, whatever, whether it be a female or not, that's not really adding anything.
Correct.
Yeah. I think it got to be hard to find like integrity and committed people in Miami, though.
All right, where are you from?
I'm from California.
Yeah.
And where are you from?
I'm from Philadelphia.
I will say one thing that sucks, but outside of like two people that I could think of, I will say a strong amount of my best employees, team members, independent contractors, whatever you want to call them, have all, a strong amount of them have not been from Miami. Mm.
This is a complacent city, in a city in which people like move on their own vibe terms whenever when it's convenient. It's like the sense of urgency.
Sense of urgency in Miami is lax.
But it reminds you of like the Caribbean, maybe, like, and like, and because there's so many, you know, different cultures here, it's probably why it's like that. Because when I went to St. Kitts, when I went to
Guyana, when we got there,
it was just like, they're like, hey, I need this now. You know, like,
or oh, it's traffic. Well, plan ahead. Yeah, like you all, it's always traffic.
It's always something. So,
and I was on time today.
Oh, we're yeah, so super on time. Super on time. That was amazing. Really, and you brought a bottle.
Yes.
But what do you think that is? Because, like, you grew up in Miami?
I grew up in Miami.
Like, the culture of Miami, like, what makes it so different from other cities in the United States?
We're blessed because we're an hour jet ski away from Bimini. We're, if we could drive a car, would be an hour and 15 minutes away from Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
So close to all the Caribbeans. And we are also, Miami is a gatekeeper city. Like, this is where everybody from Venezuela, South America, the Europe, this is like the pit stop.
Yeah.
This is the pit stop before they explore the rest of America, the rest of not only the United States, but when they go to Canada, this is their pit stop. They stop in Miami, they're here for a while, whether they live here or they're here for 2-3 weeks, and then they fly out to go meet family or explore the country.
Mm.
So I think with so many cultures here, we all rub off on each other and then we create our own culture, which is Miami.
Yeah.
Now, on a business level, we've had different, you know, I'm in some Black Professionals Network and some Professionals Network, and we realize that we find that some people that grew up in South Florida, went to college in South Florida, moved away for college and for grad school, when they come back here, they're like, this is too slow.
Mm.
The work ethics and the work quality is not to par.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're trying to stay in South Florida and do business in South Florida.
Yeah.
And they just feel like the other individuals are not on the same level.
True.
And I always tell people, most of my income doesn't really come from Miami. Most of my income comes from New York, L.A., and Miami is just where I live and lay my head.
Right.
When it's time to get real checks and real money, I'm on the road.
I see you in them offices. And
snacks. I'm on the road.
Checks.
And right. Miami is just where I live and lay my head
yeah.
and enjoy life and spend time with the family.
Of
and
course.
I love to jet ski and I love the outdoor sports. I'm an outdoor sport guy. So Miami's home. But when it's really time to do real business and lock in some real contracts,
yeah.
they're not here. When you think about it, the only major companies that are here, and I'm not talking about music related, but the major companies that are really here and have headquarters would probably be like Burger King has a corporate company here. Burger King has a company. Carnival Cruise Line. Some of the cruise lines
Norwegian,
have companies here.
Yeah.
Then you have Disney. So these are like the major multi-million dollar companies. But when you go to other markets like New York, you go to other markets like L.A., they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, when you don't talk about tech, you go to tech, it's a whole other topic of conversation.
Yeah. And we see you on it. We
yeah.
see you on the tech
you,
vibe.
You
move it. That's another topic, though.
Yeah.
I don't finish your statement, but I see you.
That's what it is. That's
yeah,
it is.
No, we had a conversation with Effect, and he was saying how it's hard. Like, if you lived in New York and you lost your job, you could probably get one real quick. But in Miami, if you're not in that industry that's here, whether it be hospitality, retail, you lose your job. Like,
you lost your job.
You might be looking for another year.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, when do you think Miami is going to catch up to, first of all, cost of living?
Cost of living is ridiculous.
I
posted something on my social media. Cost of living in South Florida is ridiculous. Like, on business level and on homeowner level and on a regular 9-to-5, people cannot afford to live in South Florida.
The not
price
alone.
Per square foot. No, you can't. You gotta get a relationship.
Or
you
a roommate.
Have a friend,
right.
Or a family member.
Cost of living in South Florida is so high. It's ridiculous.
And the wages don't match.
Correct.
No. So it's like Florida is still behind the trend. It's still looked at like people aren't retiring here anymore. People like are growing up and living here, but the state itself has not caught up to the rest right. of the country.
And there's so many studies that came out. There's so many articles and studies that came out. I think this year alone, I posted 3 articles about the cost of living and how it just doesn't make sense.
But it's continuing to develop all day.
International business.
But let me tell you, that's people from foreign countries that had came to South Florida to park their money because mm-hmm. their money was losing value. Mm-hmm. Venezuelans were having financial issues the past 2 years, and they hurry up came here like, yo, I got 100,000. I'm not going to let it just crumble down to 70,000. Yep. So I'm going to come to the U.S., park my money, buy 2-3 duplexes, condos, and I'm parking my money. So that's what all these guys did. And what it made for us working millennials in the late 20s, early 30s, trying to buy our first condo, townhouse, or property. Now we're battling to buy a property with these foreign millionaires.
Oh, yeah. I just spoke to a realtor the other day, and he's Venezuelan, but he's even like blaming it on his people, saying like they're coming over here, they're buying the condos, like you said, and then they're raising the rent. So people that actually live here can't even afford to rent.
Correct.
And it's like, I feel like growing up, the American dream was to buy a home. Then, you know, around 2000, when did the economy crash?
07, 08.
Then it was like, okay, all you guys that are coming out of college, you might have a hard time finding a job, but stick it through. Mm-hmm. We stuck it through. We trying to get our credit back on point, and then now you can't even afford to buy nothing.
And you probably got loans to pay off.
And the student loans don't get me started.
Anybody that started school from like 2004 or 2005 up until, because I graduated in 2009.
You too, yeah, me right? too.
So we get out of school and we're just like, half of our majors and the value has went down as far as our career choice. So it's just like, what do? And then you live in Miami, you start your own. But then now you got to go find these checks. Like, that's where you come in.
Yeah, we need some advice.
How do we go get the checks? Where do you find the checks?
It's not easy.
Right.
I'm not going to lie to you, it's not easy.
Where do you start? Like,
gotta have a vision, gotta have a plan, regardless of what it is. And when you create your own lane, you know, I look at like the past couple of years, and I'm looking at, like, we spoke about Effect, we spoke about Big Teach with his restaurant. We're looking at E-Class. Like, a lot of people are trying to create their own checks.
Right.
Like, they're trying to create their own checks. All these guys were in the entertainment industry at some point in time. And I love to see the entrepreneurship side of these guys trying to create their own checks and create employment for other people.
Mm.
So on my side, I love it because, you know, that was also one of the reasons why I went from DJing to open up a marketing company. Because when I was DJing, all right, I make my little X amount of dollars DJing every night. But when I open up a marketing company, now I go from just me getting a check that night to me being able to give a check to 4 or 5 of my colleagues. And back then, it was my college buddies. So whatever I gave them, you know, wrote college student, they're grateful for.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, it's not easy.
No, it's not. And I think, you know, you still got to have some type of capital to be able to create something. Because, like, Teach, you know, lucky for him, he's very successful in entertainment. So he was able to follow his dream and start his House of Mac and all that. Effect, the same thing. But some people aren't lucky enough to have that.
Even with that, this is a conversation because we're going back to the tech conversation, right? I come from the same, I think we're on the same conversation point. Most people, when they start a company, it's called friends and family is what you do. You want to start a company. Okay, you want to start a car wash. All right, you want to go buy your generator, your stove. You go to mommy, daddy, auntie, cousin, friend. You borrow $2,000-$3,000, X amount of dollars, and then you start your car wash business.
Mm-hmm.
That's how most people generally start all their companies. Or save money, work a 9-to-5, and save and live on noodles and chicken and save every penny they want, and then they save X amount of dollars, and that's a starting capital.
Right.
That's how the starting capital traditionally has started the business. Now, the 90s baby, the new age baby, how they start their company, they're going to venture capitalists, they're going to shows like Shark Tanks, they're going to people with a plan, like a piece of paper, which to me makes no sense. This is a piece of paper, this is my plan, and I want you to give me X amount of dollars, and they're getting it. Because to me, it makes no sense, like, because there's other people that have a business and have proof of income and proof of profit and profit loss over the years, how much money I've been making over the... But these new... And I'm not mad at it. This is just how the age and the times are changing. But especially in the tech world, people are just going, this is a plan with a portfolio. This is a plan. This is what I want to do. This is my business. And I want X amount of dollars. And they're getting investors. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew a guy who came to Miami... opened up an office in Brickell, wanted to do a marketing company, and had somebody fully finance his office for 2 years. Oh. Here's the office rent. Here's salary for two employees. Wrote him a check and financed his office for 2 years. Do you know how far in the world I would be?
Anybody did that for
when
you.
I started my company, right? Just said, oh, you want to start a marketing company? Here's a check. Your office is paid for 2 years, and here's salary for two of your main employees for 2 years. But nowadays, there's people that are getting this, especially on the tech side.
So then, that work ethic, do you feel is the same as someone who's in that? Because everybody says that the millennials and the youth and the young have this sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
Because they want everything fast.
Microwave, or they're the microwave age.
Microwave, or fast forward, or whatever you want to call it. It's like, do you even know what it's like to have to struggle for it? No.
I don't think
they
so.
They have no clue.
I mean, and then you also look at how, you know, technology has changed and is affecting us. Like, back in the days, people wanted ownership. They wanted to own, like, they wanted the title to their cars.
Right.
Most people, now I'm going to lease a car.
They don't care.
I want another one.
I don't care.
Even furniture.
Places of living.
Right.
Like, people wanted ownership back then. Now, I just rent this apartment for a year, this condo for a year, and then rent the furniture for a year, and then I might move, pack up, and leave, and go to a different city. So they're not looking to ownership. I think, like, the X generation is not so hands-on as far as ownership anymore.
So then what? Like,
music. Let's go back to the music side. We're streaming music. These kids don't own no records.
They're
streaming
this.
Records.
And
do
if you
remember
don't
growing
download
up,
it, you
do you remember
it.
Growing up and having going to a friend's house and like, dang, you got all those DVDs and you had the wall of DVDs up.
It was amazing.
It was competition. Yeah. You come to your house, you got your CD book. You pull out your books
and
CDs.
And if you ain't looking,
as
you might
DJ,
have to take it.
As a DJ, I remember Irie Khaled and Suicide and Kool G, Funkmaster Ali and all the reggae sounds. They used to come with a truck. Everybody had a truck with crates of records.
Right.
And that's how you used to judge the level of DJ skills.
Was your crate?
Ain't none of that.
Speaking of which, the Get Down comes back on today.
Oh,
I'll be Netflixing it up.
Netflixing
all
it up.
Day.
See?
Netflixing it up.
Do you own? You don't own it. You're Netflixing it. See?
I'm definitely Netflix. It's only coming on Netflix.
All right, we're going. Looking at the brands that you work with, you've worked with like E Entertainment Channel, mm-hmm. MMG, Def Jam,
Atlantic.
How do you approach these companies, or are you finding more and more that you know, your business is out there that people are starting to approach you?
I think the new clients that I want, you know, the new clients that I'm going after now, I have to approach. I think my client portfolio is changing now, so I have to go after the new clients. Entertainment related clients, any clients that have a pulse on the sense on a pulse on the culture. Mm-hmm. If they have the pulse on the culture, they pretty much should or hopefully are aware of me. Most of my clients are referrals. Mm-hmm. I'll say most of my clients are referrals. You do a great job. It's kind of like you hire a painter. You hire a painter, he comes here and paints your house and it's amazing. You're going to refer him.
Yeah.
He comes here and paints your house and it's horrible, you will never send him a referral. So I think a lot of my clients are referral-based. We do get some clients from Google, but most of our clients are referral-based. Now, the lane, the type of clients that we're looking to get moving forward for the next 10, 15 years, those clients, we have to go approach them. And those clients, because they're in a different lane, may not know of us that well. So we have to go and, you know, the formal presentation and show them a track record. Once we show them a track record and what we've done, we're pretty much in a good state with them.
So being able to show a track record, then you have to be prepared with all your statistics, numbers, all of that.
Analytics got to be on point.
Analytics is key right now.
Numbers. And then now you live in a day and age, like, you know, if you send a street team out to go on a corner and pass out flyers and to go to Wynwood, Art Basel, and pass out 10,000 flyers. All right, that's great. Pass out 10,000 flyers. Can you really tell them, all right, their impressions on the 10,000 flyers and the amount of people that we encountered and give numbers? It's hard to quantify it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do a social media campaign, you can pull up your impressions and your analytics a whole lot differently and easier.
Yes.
So that's where the lifestyle marketing and creative campaigns are coming into, all right, how do you show the numbers? How do you quantify it? Everything now is about numbers and quantifying it.
So with that, how do you... How are you feeling about street promotions or street marketing or guerrilla marketing at this time? Is it fizzling out or do you still feel like
it's needed? It's evolving. It's all evolving because, you know, the term street team probably disappeared 4 years ago. And it just reinvented the next following year into brand ambassadors. Mm. It's the same thing. When you look at street team and brand ambassadors,
yeah,
you just educate them on the product. They have their one sheet. They know what the product is. So I think it's just evolving. All of that is just evolving. You have brand ambassadors, promo models. It's all evolving. But the key with all of this is how do you justify? How do you quantify what the team is doing? How do you quantify how many people are targeted? How many people are reached? And that's what clients and corporate companies want to know. They want to know, I'm spending X amount of dollars, how many people am I reaching? When you do a campaign on social media or on the internet, you're able, for the most part, to quantify it. When you do a campaign in lifestyle outlets, sometimes you're not able to. But what is great to me is when you do a campaign and no matter what, consumers grab their phone and pull out their phone and take a picture of some amazing or whatever the campaign may be. Now, you have double. You reach the fans and the consumers that are on-site at the activation, and then you reach all of their followers. Mm. So that's where you're able to, that's when it has to just, to me, get a little bit more creative.
Mm-hmm. And you probably have to be able to tell them who their target market is when they're choosing you to do a campaign for them. Because to just have a company come to you and they're like, well, who do you want to target? I don't think if you're a marketing person, I don't think that shows them that they have faith and you, if you don't know who the target is. And how do you how do you show how important it is of your understanding of their brand? Because it might be somebody who comes to you and you don't know really anything about them.
I mean, regardless of the brand, you have to, you know, do your your knowledge and your research on the brand. No matter what it is, I remember we worked with a restaurant franchise and they had a crazy campaign that made sense in the boardroom for Art Basel week 3 years ago. The campaign made so much, it was clear as a glass window in the boardroom. And then when they landed in Miami, I sat down with them and me and my partner Hugo went to sit down with them in the restaurant. Like, listen, this is what you guys put on paper, black and white, in the corporate office. We're in the field and we're the one activating your thoughts. It's not going to go down that light like this. And it had to break it down why it would not go down as smooth as they thought in realistic time frames.
Okay.
And then once we broke it down to like, all right, cool. And then modify their campaign. The campaign was genius, but this is reality. You're in Miami. It doesn't matter. You're just out in the field where things are not going to be 100% crystal clear how you envision it in the boardroom. And certain clients have to understand you're gonna have to tweak the campaign sometimes. Mm. And some clients, they're just so far in the corporate office they don't understand.
Right.
But when they sit down and meet and we break it down, these are the top 10 reasons why the campaign needs to be modified for it to be effective and reach your consumers. Then after a while, all right, I get it, let's roll with the punches.
Yeah.
But when they were in the office, it looked like amazing.
There's a lot of people that don't know their own target audience, and then they expect you to make something happen, and they don't even have a full understanding who actually is reaching out or buying their product. Uh-huh. What kind of research do you do to find that out?
It depends on the product, but a lot of them have internal research teams that do the research on their sales. You look at companies like a company I can't wait to personally bring onto my client roster is Publix. Like Publix has an influx of young millennials that shop at Publix over with Nixie. Why? I don't know. Especially women.
I couldn't afford Publix when I was younger.
We didn't have Publix in Philly, but the experience, I don't know if it's the green that makes it look fresh. Like, all those things should be taken into consideration.
Yeah.
When people come up with their logos and things like that, because when I look at red, it's not as inviting as when I see the green and the Publix. It's really simple. It's really clean cut. I know I'm just going to go in. I'm probably going to come out.
You're probably not going to come out on Winn-Dixie.
Winn-Dixie, I just feel like I might just want to rush out.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
Like, you know, right. And it's just that simple. I'm like super stickler
those little things.
I would
choose
Chase over Wells Fargo. When Wells Fargo changed from Wachovia, I was having a fit. Because I didn't like the logo. I didn't like the red and yellow. I didn't like the card. It threw me. It really pissed me off to the point where I never even want to change my debit card. And my banker was just laughing at me like, are you really serious? I said, I'm very serious. I did like it.
So colors have a lot to do with marketing. They teach you, like when you learn, take marketing classes, certain colors are better with food, certain colors are better with entertainment, certain colors are better with traveling. So in colors, as far as branding and your logo, certain colors apply different things.
Right.
And these are things that you learn in marketing. And even when you're dealing with a client and they're moving a certain way, like you look at the Bel Air bottle, who came up with the black bottle. And the concept was black bottle, and then we went with a brut, and then we went with rosé, which is the luxe, which is white and the gold. All that, the white and the gold is supposed to express rich.
Rich.
Well, you know what I mean? The black and the
rosé. That's a little sexy.
What's that?
That gives me like sexy and like...
The black and the rosé was traditional because when, quote unquote, all the guys were out in the clubs and trying to be rich, first thing they wanted to buy was the rosé.
Mm.
That was the first thing. So then the next thing we did was make the rosé bottle light up. That was, you know, that was phase two of it. See, press that button.
Gotcha.
And the rosé bottle. So all that comes from understanding your demographic. You got to understand who your target audience is. Have to understand who your target audience is and then evolve with them.
Yeah, because if you don't, you're just going to be shooting in the dark and wasting money and time.
Let me tell you something. I love my brother Flo Rida, and I love that Storm on Friday. That's my whole brothers. But there was a campaign with a liquor company called Nuvo. Nuvo came out with this pink bottle of Moscato, whatever it was. I could never buy the idea of Flo Rida drinking big, diesel Flo Rida. Him, Storm Arm guy, drinking Nuvo.
Mm-hmm.
Get the check. Go ahead. They want to cut you a check, get the check. But whoever was the marketing at the time, they made a mistake. Like, that's not going to work. Then they went to Fat Joe and they went to other celebrities.
I remember
it just
that video.
Did not make sense.
Trina.
But
it
female
made sense
artists
for her.
Made sense.
Mm-hmm.
What, and this is where just understanding marketing, they could have remixed it and been like, yo, Flo Rida, he's a hot artist, top records across the country, has a bunch of girls at the table. He orders Nuvo for all
for
the girls.
For them. Yeah.
Makes sense all
I get
but
it.
But it was a simple switch.
It?
Fat Joe popping, got all the boicuas, all the beautiful Spanish girls with him. He's on a boat. He orders Nuvo for the ladies.
Yes.
Makes sense. But when they went, this artist is drinking Nuvo.
Yeah, it's not believable.
It doesn't make sense.
But that comes from understanding your target audience, understanding your
product.
And having a clear, but guess what? Whoever got that big check at the marketing agency, at the strategic planning agency, on the corporate boardroom, they thought they were winning.
Yeah,
they were.
Once more, they didn't understand the culture.
No.
Wow.
And that's why we go back to Pepsi. It's like, what culture were you trying to target there? Because it's
you just missed everybody. You desensitize something that is very sensitive to a lot of people at the moment, and then... You don't even feel any remorse.
I'm just so proud of them. That retraction thing came so quick.
Yeah.
It took 2 days?
No, like
1 day?
24 hours.
Yeah, I think more or less you're going to see the Jenner family. I'm not even going to say Kardashian because she's a Jenner. Might have to apologize a little bit more because it seemed like she was more like, I'm devastated rather than I might have offended you guys. You're not even worried about that.
Pepsi got to cut me a check. Pepsi... Somebody at Pepsi.
Y'all fucked it up for me.
I mean, people care. That conversation was in my classroom today where even the teacher didn't... she said she saw it and she didn't really see it. And she's of another culture. She didn't see how bad it was until I broke it down. And I said, wait a minute.
You just took something. You don't understand.
That really came out.
Right. I was like, wait. I mean, this is... what were they talking about? Like, what was? I don't even remember what their issue was or what they were rallying for.
We don't know. That's the whole point.
I thought it
said
was for like autism or something. Like,
no,
something,
it said join the conversation. That's what the signs in the commercial said.
And for me, it was like they were trying to bring all the cultures together. You want to bring all the cultures? Like, have different grandmoms sew a quilt or something like that. You know what I'm saying? While drinking a Pepsi or something. And it's showing that the Indians and the Native Americans and the African Americans and the Caucasians, everybody's coming together to build this quilt of America, which America's a quilt. I get that for Pepsi. And they're all sitting around different grandmoms. Right? But not a whole bunch of people passing a can of Pepsi when people are really dying, you know, and people are really hurt and people are really angry and upset about what's happening. Like, that made no sense to me.
Right.
At all.
At the hands of the police that you handed the Pepsi to.
Yeah.
Which are the people that were angry at in the first place. And it's not even just a little bit of people. It's is a lot of people that came together from different cultures that are mad about the same situation.
It's it's not just black people that are mad. Right,
yeah. It's everybody's upset.
Yeah, everybody mad, which is
and
good.
I think that's where they messed up. And it's like, you're Pepsi. How but now, do you miss it?
They missed it, but how about this? What about putting the name, was it on a Coca-Cola bottle or Pepsi bottle?
Coca-Cola.
That was a great campaign.
That was amazing. I was like what? And they had ethnic names, too.
Yeah. they're going around having people's names on the bottle. Yes. Like, first thing I do when you get that bottle is take a picture.
Yes.
Once again, the exposure. I got my Alex bottle. I got my...
Felicia bottle. There was a Felicia can.
Dang.
Drink with whatever it said. No, that was
so
dope.
So once again, like... Companies are going to try, and sometimes you're going to win, and sometimes you're going to miss your mark. It's part of marketing.
Yeah.
It's all part of marketing. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some.
Right.
Hopefully, all your wins are over your losses.
True.
We're talking a lot about marketing, but there's one thing that I do want to applaud you on, and it's like, you really put you're really in the ground, you're really stepping into it, and I'm really proud of you for going back to Haiti. And really just working on those projects as far as restoring, you know, after the hurricane. And then even still, like, just taking clothes over there. Like, you're heavily involved in restoring that side. I've never been there. I heard it's beautiful.
What are you waiting for? Come on.
I heard you. You got them private jets. Let's go.
And you got them M's.
I got some clothes. I got some clothes.
I'm saying those M's.
You got the M's. You
got the M's.
I have the shooters outside my house, man.
Oh, no. But I really applaud you because... A lot of people talk about, oh, we should do this and we can do this, or
I mean,
this is what we should do. But you're actually doing it, and I've seen you do it.
I think that comes from, like, me just... Certain things to me are just easy. And some people say it's a gift that you have or whatever. But to me, it's like, yo, all right, when we need to pass out flyers, all right, what do we do? You get a box of flyers. You and your boys, you go out, you go pass out the flyers. You map out where you want to go, and you all go hit those spots. All right. We want to go to Haiti, and we want to help out. All right, what are we going to do? Call somebody in Haiti, find out 3 orphanages that need help, put it on social media, hey, we need toys, we need shoes, we need 100 pairs of shoes, and we need 100 pairs of clothes or whatever it may be. Go around, get in the car, go collect them. All right, how much is shipping going to cost? Figure out the shipping, fly to Haiti, give it, come back. To me, it's that simple. But I think that comes from business. That's a little bit from these years of business. Like, all right, what's the problem? What's the solution?
Yeah.
How do we execute it?
Yeah.
So... I think those skills have allowed me to now venture into, you know, philanthropy better. It's just those business skills that just helped me and have allowed me to venture into philanthropy. My family's been in Haiti forever, and they've been doing a lot of business and, of course, some nonprofit things. And now it's just me following the family footstep and, all right, this is what you guys are doing. This is how I could add to it. And this is, you know, it's nothing for me to... put the muscle on a few celebrity friends and like, look, you guys are doing all this. This is what I need. I'm flying back on this date and we need, you know, we have a goal of 5,000 toys and how can we make it happen and how can we get it delivered there? Like what we're able to do with me and my partner Jones and other people that are helping me out is just, all right, just the goal is the vision. Let's go out and do it.
Yeah.
And I think it's just really, let's go out and do it. You can say, you know what, next 2 weeks from now, I want to feed 100 people. And it's just, you can invite literally 10 of your homegirls at your house and say, every girl do 10 sandwiches.
Yeah.
And then that's 100 sandwiches. And then now in 2 weeks, you guys are able to feed 100 homeless. You may not be able to do it every week, but you can say once a month we're feeding 100 people.
Right.
So it's just a matter of get up and go do it. So with me, what we were able to do in Haiti and what we're going to continue doing in Haiti is just, all right, this is the goal this year, and here we go. And I think helping out after the last hurricane was really just like a domino and an emotional effect, because when the earthquake happened a couple of years ago, I just kind of like froze, didn't know which way to what to do. When the hurricane happened this past year, my cousins were already on the ground and people were banging on our construction site like, yo, the roads are blocked, you guys have all this heavy equipment and the construction company, construction tools, help us out. So they just literally just jumped in the truck, this is what we have, construction tools and big bulldozers, we're going to bulldoze the road and open up the road. Then they hit me and said, look, this is what we need. This is the list of the top 20 items that we need. Let's collect it and we'll figure out how to get it to Haiti. Started collecting it, and sure enough, we figured out how to get it to Haiti. But to me, it's all A, B, C,
yeah.
D, E.
Yeah, and you have to be connected to it as well, I think, because I know Haiti has had a troubled, like, political past, especially with America getting involved after that first earthquake and Hillary Clinton and all that. So I know it can still be difficult, but like you said, if you just do it and execute it, have a plan, like, it's possible.
And then I think it's all also with your passion, like you know, if you're gonna go into the humanitarian and you're gonna go into philanthropy, you have to do whatever is passionate for you. Like, to me, you know, some people are gonna be on the medical side because they're nursing, so they want to be able to help people on the medical side, whether it's vitamins or health or blood pressure, because they're on medical. That's what their passion is. My family is in reconstruction, so we're going to go into reconstruction. I got a passion for kids. I have a 9-year-old, so I'm into orphanages. Some people are very into Christmas and holidays and celebration and gifts and toys and doing parties, so they're going to be maybe more moving into, I want to do a Christmas activation. So I think whatever it is, and some people are like, yo, I don't want nobody to starve, so they're going to be trying to bring food. Yeah. So whatever it is that motivates you, and some like John the Tax Doctor, he's into sports. He donated like 500 soccer balls because that's what motivates him. Like, I just want to get these kids out there having fun playing soccer and being active and running and exercising. That's what he's into. So whatever it is that motivates you, I think that's what it should be. Like, some of you guys maybe into fashion and makeup. I want to send makeup kits so girls could play around and do makeups. It could be as simple as that.
Right.
My friend went to Africa for her birthday, her 30th, and she was actually able to go to an orphanage and do like a beauty, like, teach inner beauty type thing with the kids, and I was just like, wow, like, that's dope. Shout out to Nikki Pumpkin. Shout her out, because that was. You just don't see people doing it, especially young people. Just, hey, I want to help somebody else instead of being selfish. Yeah. I think we're in a selfish era where everybody's worried about themselves. They forget to do things for other people. And I know Effect talked about it. You kind of had to put people on blast on social media too. Like, hey, I see y'all all the time. You want to get in the club? You want to do this?
Yeah.
I need you to help. Yeah. And it's like, why do we have to do so much to get people?
But that's the advantage of social media.
To you help could, when they spend money on everything else.
Squeeze somebody's shoulder and tell them, "I need your help." Mm-hmm. What do they want to? You know, sometimes we need to be waking up. Like, they just think they're in their own world.
People got a lot of stuff on their mind and might be blind to it. I might not even realize you're going through something or trying to. You have a cause, so you kind of do gotta like put it in their face sometimes.
You know, and I will say, like, even me, one of my last trips that we took to Haiti, one of the Bob Marley's granddaughters came with us, and with us at the time, our main thought was, all right, we need to feed these people right now because people don't have food, and we need to give them clothes, and then we need to figure out shelter. Those were the three things: food, shelter, and clothes. She comes and she brings crayons and papers and has all the kids drawing. I'm like, my mind was not on it.
Yeah, you weren't thinking of that. Yeah.
But yeah, we're dealing with the parents, but there's kids just sitting there. So she came, pulls out her tables and pulls out her quilt, and she's drawing. That's her passion.
Yeah.
And it made sense to me that she brought her own crayons, and all the kids are there doing collages, and she brought them back home. Like, but me, my mind frame goes into that when I go to an orphanage.
Yeah,
I'm just literally out in the field. My mind frame's not there. Right. So once more, if anyone wants to get involved in humanitarian or any of that things, just find whatever your passion is.
Yeah.
Whatever your passion is, and rock with that.
Makes sense. Well, I think you've dropped a lot of jewels
very
in this
much,
interview. We do like to ask our guests at the end if there's anybody that's wanting to follow their passion, their drive, maybe a goal or something that they wish they could do but never have
don't
done yet. Don't think they can get there. What would be your advice to someone to just kind of just go out there and do it? Or is it that go out there and do it?
maybe you said it wrong.
I know.
How can you figuratively say that
and
in your own words? That's how I talk to my kids.
Reality is, yes, you need to get out there and do it, but you're going to have roadblocks. You're going to have speed bumps. You're going to have a tree that just crumbles and falls and blocks the road. So that's when you got to just, you know, take the truck, put it on 4x4 and drive over that tree. Or if you ain't got a truck, take an axe and cut that tree out the way and keep going, because you're definitely... I've had so many roadblocks, whether it's family, whether it's personal relationships, whether it's clients, quote-unquote haters, whatever it may be, you're going to have roadblocks. You're going to have obstacles. But keep that goal in mind and stay focused, because a lot of us, you know, you're going to get to a point when you're, like, moving and, all right, I'm doing good, and then you might need to lose focus. Then you got to regroup.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us, no matter what industry, what field, what we're doing, sometimes you got to take a pause and just regroup. So my regrouping is going to Haiti in December, chilling out with the family, breathing, relaxing, Then when I start back the year in January, I'm fresh, I'm focused, I'm ready to go.
Awesome.
Well, we thank you.
Thank you for taking the time out your busy day.
Tell us where we can find you on social media and whatever website you have.
LEXPromotions.com across the board. LexPromotions.com on Twitter. LexPromotions.com is the website. At LexPromotions on Twitter. At LexPromotions on Instagram. At LexPromotions on LinkedIn. At LexPromotions on Google Plus.
Okay.
LexPromotions. And if you're trying to reach me personally, you can reach me on LexPureLewis.com.
All right.
And you can find us on Instagram at the underscore.
Oh, you talking about us? Socialites.
Yes. And then anti-socialites on Twitter. And then we have a website where it's www.the-antisocialites.com.
Marketing tip, try to have all of it.
I know we're gonna have to buy it from a couple of people, so you know we're working on getting our money up. So if you can help us get these checks,
you can revise it. You know, anti-socialites.
Listen, we've tried. It's a little weird. It's a lot going on. Everybody wants to be anti-social these days.
Yeah, but we're not. So
we're just social in our own terms. Plug it. Get the t-shirt. It's online.
Yep, for sure. Well, you already know each and every week we drop in the hottest interviews in the game.
I hope I'm the best one. No, I'm kidding.
The coolest podcast in coolest Miami. Podcast.
I'm hot. I am cool. I'm hot. I'm on fire.
Listen, all right. We ain't mad at that, but
we're going to cool you down. We're going to cool you down. All right, then. You already know. It's your girl, Just P.
And it's your girl, Vina Nye.
And it's Lex Pierre Lewis.
And we're out.